It's an everyday reality in America that a mass shooting could happen anywhere and at any time. This year alone, we've seen an attack on a 4th of July parade in Illinois. A gunman stormed the classroom of an elementary school in Texas. And this everyday reality has a lot of people asking, why do I have to see this every day? What can we do differently to avoid this? Here on Culture Shift, we wanted to look at this through the lens of the media, as journalists become just as exhausted as their readers because they are yet again in this cycle of covering another mass shooting. It says some editors and reporters calling for the release of graphic images of violent crime victims to show the totality of what a mass shooting actually looks like. Graphic images of violent crime victims are rarely published or aired by mainstream news outlets in this country. Few will show blood or a victim's face, but amid an epidemic of mass shootings, some journalists argue it's time to change that. Others say not so fast. To have this conversation, we're joined by John Temple, the former editor of Denver's Rocky Mountain News. Back in April 1999, John was at the paper when the Columbine High School was attacked by two students, killing 12 of their peers and a teacher. He recently wrote about his experience for The Atlantic in a story titled "Publishing Photos of Dead Children Could Backfire." He joins us live on Culture Shift. John, thank you so much for taking the time and talking with us.
Thank you for asking me to be here.
It was a really powerful story that you put together for The Atlantic. It stuck with me ever since I read it. And I really want to go back to that time when you're the editor of this paper and you're covering a school shooting and what that experience was like for you from that media perspective.
Yeah, it's a day. Those are days that still live with me. I mean, you can't get away from them. I mean, here we are 23 years later talking about it. And every time there's a shooting, it comes back to me. And that's a terrible experience to have it happen in your community. And sadly, many, many more communities are experiencing the same thing or even worse in some cases.
We've had to deal with it here in Oxford, Michigan, fairly recently. It's something that definitely lives on in the community. And you actually have a photo that you keep in your office of from that day, a photo that you decided to publish in the newspaper. Can you tell me about that?
Well, on that day, we had a very strong photo staff at the Rocky Mountain News, and we were we had a very aggressive approach to covering the news, which meant we chased the news hard. We tried to get the best photos and the best stories we could. And one of the photos, we rented a helicopter on the day of Columbine, and we immediately got over the school, and our photographer Rudy Gonzalez shot a photo that just haunted me that day and still does. And the photo shows a child, a boy we thought was dead or likely dead, lying on a sidewalk outside the school, a can of Dr. Pepper that he had been carrying, you know, sort of laying it aside with the soda streaming out. But only a few feet away, cowering behind a car, are a police officer pointing a rifle at the school, and there are like seven or eight students cowering behind the car with him because they're afraid of being shot from the school. So it's an incredibly dynamic moment that captures all of the tension and fear and horror of that, of a school shooting. And when we saw this photo, we wondered, well, what do we do with this photo? And the reality is we ran this photo of a dead child, large, in full color, inside the newspaper. And we also distributed it to the Associated Press. And some papers in other states or in other countries actually ran it on the front page. So we actually did run without the parents' permission. In fact, it turned out that the officers had not confirmed the death of this boy to the parents by the time they saw this photo in the newspaper. So it was terrible for the parents, as obviously, I mean, the whole day was terrible for them, but the photo had a dramatic effect on them as well.
Take me into the newsroom at that time. What are the debates about publishing a photo like that? Because I would imagine it's something that you're not, you know, doing on the fly. There's a lot of debate around this.
There was a lot of debate until, I mean, I went home, I believe, at around 4 a.m. that day, and I was still wrestling with, you know, the fact that this was a boy, the parents were going to recognize, the family would recognize him on the sidewalk. The debates are around, one, you know, the who sees the photo and when, and are they prepared? What do you put on the front page? We published an extra edition that day, and the first pictures we saw from the scene were so bloody because they were from the front lawn of a suburban house where there was a triage center set up. We didn't think we could run them because there was no context, and people would be like, my God, what are you showing? And we ultimately did find a photo for the cover. And on the cover of the next day's paper, we ran a very powerful photo that was one of the photos that won the Pulitzer Prize. But the debate around this photo is, do you show a dead body without, you know, do you, that's the fun of a child. And I decided that you do in this context because the photo so captured the event. I mean, there was, it was just, you could not turn away from this photo. It showed the school, the child, the police, the guns. And the feeling was that if we placed it in a context where you were prepared to see the photo, so you knew you were going to see dramatic photos, that it was a reasonable thing to ask people to look at it, and that it was important that they looked at it. Our hope, even on the first day, was that when people saw how terrible this was, that it would have an effect, that we would rise up as a community to make sure that this never happened again.
John, that's what made your writing about this for The Atlantic so powerful, because you're in this position to publish a photo like this. You're going through the debates. You do not have permission from the family, which is a big part of this debate. And yeah. you still do it. But now, when you're writing for The Atlantic, you say we shouldn't be publishing these photos moving forward, even as people call for them to be published, hoping that that change will happen, the same change that you hoped happened out of Columbine.
That's true, but it's a little more my view is a little more nuanced than that, to be fair. I mean, I understand what you're saying. What people are calling for now is to show the damage to a human body, in particular a child, that an automatic weapon causes, that these AR-15s and the cause. And that is far more graphic and detailed than the photo we showed, which showed a lifeless body, but is more is a more journalistic photo. What I fear about the kinds of photos that people are calling for is that just showing gore, which is what I would, there's no evidence in my view that gore alone is going to have any impact on and change attitudes. And in fact, it could open the door to a lot of other problems. And so I am not against publishing powerful photos of the devastation of gun violence, but I think it has to be done thoughtfully. And we have to remember that while people are calling for these photos, they're not available. These are crime scenes where effectively the police cordon off the scene, and you never, as a journalist, to my knowledge, and I've only seen the blood of a shooting like you're describing once, and that was from Columbine. Later, photos were leaked to me of the shooters, the two violent students, dead on the floor of the library where they had committed suicide. And I did not feel that those photos should be published, and I did not publish them. If they had been photos of children at the time, I might have published them, but I didn't see the point of publishing a photo of the killers in that way. And I didn't want to in any way glorify the killers.
In your writing for your for The Atlantic, you do point that out. You write that, you know, there's worry that making public photos of this violence could motivate others to see how much damage they could cause.
Yeah. I did not believe in copycats. When Columbine occurred, it really wasn't part of my understanding that that there were copycats. But I learned from Columbine that when you open the door like that, there are people who think, I can even be more outrageous. I can be even more, I can kill more people and have more notoriety. I can do worse things and the world will celebrate it in part because they will show what I have done. And I think that's a real and legitimate fear that we should not do things that encourage copycats.
I want to invite listeners out there to join this conversation. The number is 313-577-1019. Again, 313-577-1019. Where do you stand in this debate? Do you think images should be published from these mass shootings to be able to show the totality of what gun violence actually looks like? Do you think it could create changes in the United States, which suffers from an epidemic of mass shootings? Or do you think that's too far to put that in a newspaper, too gruesome, too graphic, and think it's inappropriate? Really curious to have your voice join this conversation right now. 313-577-1019 is the number to call. John, you're talking about the photos that were published, you know, avoiding the gruesome gore violence. You also wrote in The Atlantic, you said, I would look for photographs that won't make people turn away, that instead will hold their gaze. What do you mean by that?
Just there's some photos that are in your face, and I would think of a gunshot wound as potentially being like a close up of a demolished head or body as being that kind of photo. But there's context. Like if you think of Emmett Till in the casket, the famous photo that the mother wanted the world to see her child, her son, and what had been done to him. There was a context to that photo. And I think, and the context was the love of the community, the love of the mother, the dignity of the child in the casket, and the horror that had been wreaked upon him. That's different than just a crass picture. And one thing I really admire photojournalists, and they are able, you know, you have to remember that each photo has to be judged on its merits, and that it's hard to talk in the abstract about photos because that's not how photos work. They're very, very specific. So, for example, in my experience, I remember a very powerful set of photos that were done about a child who had been badly burned in a house fire recovering. And the mother was holding the child in a bathtub. It was called The Story of Sage, and a very capable, very talented editor, very brave editor, and a very talented photographer. They'd spent the time to get to know the mother and the child, and they captured the impact of the fire with the mother holding the child in a bath of water and gently trying to take care of the child. And it was a shocking photo, but you didn't turn away because there was so much also beauty and love in it. And I think about school shootings, and I think about or shootings in general, and I think one thing we all forget is those who survive and are wounded, they live on, and many have to deal with the suffering that they go through. And one of the problems with our coverage is it's very drop in, cover the shooting, move on to the next shooting, drop in, move on to the next shooting. And maybe the way to approach this is to more deeply across the country show the way that people are dealing with life post-shooting after being wounded, whether they're paralyzed, whether they've lost use of an arm, how they're recovering. And that can be done with the permission, and it can show the human price in a really deep and moving way that people would not turn away from, because this is a human being that is dealing with what has happened to them. And maybe that is a photo that we can obtain. Those are photos we can obtain without police permission, without access to a crime scene. All they require is developing relationships with the families or the wounded. And I think that's one path that news organizations can take that is available to them without thinking that there's this one photo that's going to stop all school shootings, which is, I think, or not forget school shootings, all shootings. I think there's this idea that if somehow we only did this one thing, people would stop, it would change things. And rather, I think deepening the understanding of the cost might be a better way to go.
We're talking to John Temple, the former editor of Denver's Rocky Mountain News back in April 1999. John was at the paper when the Columbine High School was attacked by two students, and he wrote about his experience of publishing photos from that shooting as journalists and other members of the media call for some of these photos to be released, showing the violence, gun violence here in the United States. We're going to continue this conversation with your calls, including calls from Joe and Suzanne. We're going to take those calls right after the break. And if you want to join this conversation, the number is 313-577-1019. Where do you stand? Do you think these photos should be published in the paper so we can see what this violence actually looks like in hopes of maybe changing the ways things happen in this country when it comes to gun violence? Or do you think that's too much? I'd love to hear from you. 313-577-1019. More of this conversation coming up next here on Culture Shift. Let's go ahead and continue this conversation with your calls right now on Culture Shift. Let's go ahead to Suzanne. I don't know where you're calling from, but welcome to Culture Shift.
Hi. Yeah, this is Suzanne calling from Bloomfield Hills. It's an interesting conversation, and I think if we think back to the time in the war in Vietnam, when they started showing pictures of dead GIs, that the anti-war movement gained strength, and Americans started thinking about the real purpose of the war. And one photograph that really made an impact and won a Pulitzer Prize was the shooting at Kent State, where you saw a fellow student grieving or mourning over the body of her a fellow student at Kent State. And I'd like to hear your speaker react to that. Is that the kind of photo he's talking about that would make an impact and make people think and start paying more attention to what this is doing to kids in our schools and Americans in general?
Suzanne, thank you so much for that that call. Really powerful perspective there. And John, that's something that you bring up in your writing for The Atlantic. Some of these, you know, massively historic photos. You mentioned Emmett Till's casket. Another one is the photo by Nick Ut, a Napalm Girl, that really a lot of people credit for being responsible for helping to end the Vietnam War. Some of these photos throughout history make big changes.
I think Suzanne raises a great point. And I think the Kent State photo, I hadn't thought of that, but it's a perfect example of a photo that you would not look away from. There's and there's something about that photo that I think we should discuss, which is that shooting occurred in public in a place where a photographer was able to be present because they were covering a protest and captured a moment brilliantly as a photographer that, you know, was incredibly moving. And I would publish that photo, you know, today. I certainly hope I would have published it then, and full credit to those who did. it's a perfect example. But the conditions under which that photo were made are very rare, in the sense that it's hard to think of a shooting where a professional, skilled photographer was present to capture the moment. What we may end up seeing in time is smartphone photos of shootings that have a similar or related effect. However, they're typically not made by people who have the skill to take that the photo that Suzanne describes. But that's a great example of the kind of photo I would say will hold people's gaze and will force them to ask what is going on.
John, the bringing in the idea of cell phone photos, I mean, that is something that has really changed news entirely. And when we actually look at these shootings, that's what happened at the 4th of July shooting in Highland Park, Illinois. There was a photographer on site just at the parade who used her camera to take photos. And the Chicago Sun-Times decided to not publish the majority of those photos, debating, you know, whether or not it was the right thing to do. But again, when we talk about access, it did give them access to these scenes, which you argue sometimes is hard to get. I want to get more callers in the mix here. This is definitely connecting with people right now. Christopher in Detroit, you're on Culture Shift. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is I don't think we should give more credence and to this energy, and for to have things that love to be manifested and truth to be revealed, for peace to be still and freedom to be ours and justice be merciful. You know, we have like so much more in common as United States citizens that because of the false ethnicity of race, nationalism, we are actually committing acts of treason against our fellow citizens. You know what I'm saying? As United States citizens, we have to understand that American history is not United States history. You know, it's a part of it. It was the past. You know, we have to put that down, that capitalism, that Joachim patriarchy, and understand that they were Masons, and we have a basism system of universal basic income, because race is all about economics. That is why the James Baldwin slave was created, was for economics and economic purposes. You know what I'm saying? With the fall of the feudal system and stuff. So to this degree that we see in it today, it can only be alleviated by the trust being given to firms, institutions, and households, and ridding our institutions of race and social conservatism, because by pagan rights, we are all free to be due to the freedom of religion.
Christopher in Detroit, I really appreciate the perspective. Thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Glenn in Shelby Township. You're on Culture Shift.
Hi. I was hoping to talk about the over-sanitizing of what we see and what we experience as human beings. And I think that the gun violence and the repetitive nature of these mass shootings is because we don't show these things. It's the same with war. You can't even show a flag-draped coffin anymore. You can't photograph a flag-draped coffin. I don't know who it was that passed that. I think it might have been Bush, one of them. And if you send people to war and they're dying horridly, and you don't show this, it's the same as what's going on now. We've got these mass shootings. They keep happening. We can't get rid of the guns. It's still happening. And it's happening, in my opinion, because we're over-sanitizing our experiences. It's like a video game to people. They see it on TV. They see like you say, they cordon everything off to keep people from seeing the bad things that are happening. And if we keep going down this road, everything's going to be normal. What if we did this with slavery? If we didn't show the tragedy of slavery and the horrors of it, what would happen? It would just dissolve into the past. But we keep revisiting that because it strengthens our drive to correct ourselves as humans. And if we don't do that with I'm a photographer myself, and if we don't do that with photography, the one art that has changed the world, we're missing an opportunity to hold a mirror up to ourselves and say, this is who we are, and you're either okay with it or you're not.
So if we publish these images, do you feel like it would bring change, Glenn? Is that your hope? Do you think it would really change people's minds?
Well, I think that if it doesn't, we could just stop doing it. You know, right now we've sanitized everything. Like I say, when I heard about you can't even show a photograph of a flag-draped coffin on a 767 or whatever, I was like, are you kidding me? You know, now it's like we send our poor kids off to war. They die. And it's like we keep sending them to these ridiculous wars that mean nothing because we don't know what's happening. We don't see. I mean, there's a limit, of course. You know, there's a limit. I mean, I would say as far as maybe a faceless body, you know what I mean? Edit that out, but show the body. Don't show, you know, Steve that grew up next door to me went off to war, but show humans that have died horribly because of these AK-47s that we seem to think are cool. And that's, you know, it's you can always undo what you do. You can always continue to not show the flag-draped coffins.
Right.
But you can always go back.
Glenn in Shelby Township, I appreciate that call. And John, I want to toss that to you. You know, that idea of always going back. I mean, can you talk about that from an editor's perspective? Is there a slippery slope if we start doing this, what the end game could look like?
I think there is. I don't think you can always go back. I think, excuse me, I'm sorry. I think that the reality is once you open the door to certain types of images, in the days of social media and the era we live in, the cat's out of the bag and you'll never go back. I don't disagree with the caller that we should show images and that we should be really, but I think we should be really thoughtful about it. And I don't think we can just go back. So once you've opened the door, you don't know what's next, but I can tell you that it's likely to get worse.
Let's go ahead and talk to Joe in Midtown. You're on Culture Shift.
Hey, it's a great subject. Yeah, this is Joe actually from Rochester Hill in Midtown right now.
Okay.
I think we need to show it the way it is. The question I'd like to see answered, though, is I hear the we part. And who's making the decisions on what gets filtered and what gets shown and what we get told. I mean, if you see this story, any story in the U.S. from the U.S. news, and then you go and see the story from an outside agency, either even Canada, Europe, England, anywhere, it's different, much more graphic. I mean, they show it the way it is. Here we filter it. I mean, but to me, my question is, who's ultimately filtering it? Is it the sponsors? Are we getting pressure? Is it, the military-industrial complex? I mean, who is the we part here?
Thank you so much, Joe, for that call. And John Temple, I'll toss that to you, some of that sure. Decision-making or gatekeeping in terms of who publishes these photos and why.
Well, I think one thing to point out is that, you know, media is not monolithic. These are different organizations are going to make different decisions. And it's very important as an editor not to make a decision based on what others are doing, but to make the decision based on what you think is right. And I'll give you an example from the Columbine case of the dead boy outside the school. The mother was very upset when she saw that photo and thought I was wrong and was very angry with me. But sometime later, maybe a year or two later, wrote me a letter actually telling me, thanking me for publishing the photo and telling me that I should have the courage to do what I think is right and that that was what is important. And the way decisions are made in most news organizations is that there are multiple poems, so we would talk about images to get different people's reaction to those images. The editor has the ultimate responsibility. And it certainly had nothing to do with sponsors or anything like that. But when you're running a newspaper, for example, you know that the newspaper is going to be delivered into a home, and the first person who sees it might be a 9-year-old child who looks at the front page. So you have to, you do have to think about sort of the random way a publication hits people, which is why I put that photo inside but ran it large, so that you know what you were getting into if you really wanted to look at things like that. But I don't think, obviously, people are making decisions for different reasons, but I would tell you that at most news organizations, multiple people with different perspectives are involved in decision-making.
Let's go to Jeff in Huntington Woods, who is a physician. Jeff, thanks for joining Culture Shift.
Yeah, thanks for including me. It's simple. These are infectious diseases, whether it be suicide, murder, mass shootings. You have to be very careful. If you show one, it can lead to many more. It's nothing about rational thought. It's about psychiatric illnesses with psychiatric components. And if you show photos, you got to be careful it doesn't lead to more.
Jeff in Huntington Woods, thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, that's been a perspective that we've talked about during this hour, is the idea of copycats, or the idea of these gruesome images creating others who want to imitate it. Definitely a risk. Let's go to Glenn in LaSalle Gardens. You're on Culture Shift.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. This is a great discussion. I really like the fact you're getting on both sides. I really think we need to show the pictures. I think people need to get away from the Second Amendment, and they need to start looking at the real damage that this is occurring and the way it's really, I mean, some of it's mutilating the children. It's hard for me to even imagine. So I think we have to show the real pictures. I understand the slippery slope idea. The thing is, if we show more of these pictures, maybe there'll be less shooting. So we may not have to pull back. And the other thing I want to compliment WDET. A couple of years ago, you started calling in your reports on traffic. You started calling them crashes instead of accidents. And I think that's an example of what we're talking about. It wasn't an accident. It was a crash. And maybe people died. People need to understand the consequences of driving safely, and of guns.
Glenn in LaSalle Gardens, really appreciate that call. John, kind of goes hand in hand, photos and the language we use. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And that's kind of why I think that journalists working deeper is the way to capture this cost, exactly what the caller says. Let's show the cost and let's show the crash. But the crash could be not only the memorial of flowers around us, the site of a shooting or the funeral service, but it could be the living having to deal with what they experienced, especially those who are wounded and the families and friends of those who are wounded. And when you see that cost, which we're living with every day, that's a way that we know we can get these, which would be graphic images, by the way. That's when we know when we could get these images, rather than thinking that we're going to get them at the moment of the shooting. I don't know the particulars of the Chicago Sun-Times decision, so I can't really speak to it, and I don't know what photos they had, but I would hope that photos from a live scene, we would err on the side of really placing people within that moment and experiencing the horror of it, but do it in a way that's thoughtful and that people are prepared to experience that.
Let's go to James in Ann Arbor. We've got about a minute here, James. You're going to have the last word on this. What's on your mind?
I'll be brief. The sanitizing of this, I think, plays into the hands of the people that fight against woke, the NRA that fights against guns. in that trying to explain to people the real history of the country, the abuse of the indigenous people, the abuse of the enslaved people, the abuse of women, the abuse of gay people. You see Hannity and Carlson at night demonizing people, trying to inform people, and then that takes that group of people and turns them against, you know, the reality of what's out there. So the more reality that you can show, no matter how bad it hurts, that wakes up people that actually still have some sense about them. To think that Trump didn't create treason against this country is insane, but there is a clear majority on the right that think that's okay. So I think it needs to be shown. We need to be reminded so that we don't get this sanitized, you know, everything's really cool version of things.
James in Ann Arbor, powerful perspective to help wrap up this conversation. And John Temple, before we let you go, it kind of brings me to this final question I've had for you, is that responsibility for journalists. At the end of the day, you know, you wrote about this for The Atlantic. What responsibility do journalists have when something like a mass shooting occurs?
Well, I think I agree with the caller, and I think our responsibility is to bear witness, and it's not just to bear witness in the moment. It's to bear witness of the cost of these terrible events, and our job is to show the truth, and we should show what's really happening. That means, however, that you have to look at each photo, each story on its own merits, and editors have to have the courage to make a decision that's not based on the promise, you know, the acceptance or the agreement of the victim potentially, or that the community may not like it. I can tell you that as an editor, the community got sick of us covering Columbine. The community eventually wanted to forget it, and we wouldn't let it go because we felt it was so important to know what really happened and how that had been possible. And so editors have to stick with it, and it requires a lot of perseverance. And one of the challenges is the economics of journalism don't necessarily support going to that depth and the time it takes to do the kind of journalism your callers are hoping for that will inform us about the truth of our nation.
That is John Temple, the former editor of Denver's Rocky Mountain News, who in April 1999 was covering the Columbine High School shooting. John recently wrote about that experience for The Atlantic and a story titled "Publishing Photos of Dead Children Could Backfire," about what we should do with these photos. Should we publish them? Should we not? It's a debate that's certainly going to carry on. We'll certainly be having it again here on Culture Shift. And John, I really appreciate you bringing your perspective to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you to the callers for your really thoughtful comments.